He had his mission. He just needed a few inconvenient stormtroopers and engineers to get out of the way. At least Bodhi was gone. No one to witness what happened next. Krennic and Galen were speaking. Still too many people in the line of fire. Cassian would need a story for Jin. He knew that. She wouldn't believe him no matter what he told her, but if he offered her something plausible, and Bodhi backed the portions of his tale that were true, she might not act rashly. She'd suspect Cassian in the back of her mind, and he'd need to watch himself so long as they were together. But the uncertainty might suffice to drag her down. Without her father, and without a target, her obsession and need would drain out of her like pus. If they made it off Edu, if she survived to return to Yavin, he would be done with her then. Even with her fire gone cold, she'd be better off than she was in prison. Galen was gesturing. The crowd was reconfiguring again, the other engineers stepping forward. Still no shot. Destroying Jin. That's what it would be, you can admit that much, was his best option. If she did realize what he'd done, she'd turn that feral need against him. She'd want him dead, probably sway the Guardians of the Wheels and Bodhi against him as well. The engineers were arrayed in front of Krennic and Galen. Krennic's retinue of black-clad troopers fanned out. A few more steps. Maybe that wouldn't be such a terrible way to go. He'd assassinated better men than Galen. An Imperial collaborator. The man who'd built a planet killer. Remorse be damned. And if Jin came after Cassian, he'd die for his crimes. There were worse deaths. Was that what it had come to? Galen stepped forward. Cassian had the shot. But he was breathing too hard now. The rifle rose and fell. He clamped a hand on the barrel, lodged it firmly against the rocks. He was tired of crimes he never answered for. The Death Star is your answer. Finish this mission and all is forgiven. He looked at Galen Erso through his scope and saw his daughter's eyes. With a hoarse and ragged cry, he swept the rifle away from the rocks and set it in the mud at his side. None of the engineers answered Krennic's accusation. He hadn't really expected them to. No one, he asked. The traitor will still be executed. But at least he can die making a stand. Maybe he'll convert someone here. He swept a gloved hand around the platform. With his dying words. Unopen was opening and closing his mouth as if caught between begging for the traitor to step forth and attempting a show of silent indignation. Two of the other engineers were looking at their fellows intently, as if frantically conducting their own investigations. Galen, standing beside Krennic, took a single step forward and did nothing else. Very well, Krennic said. I'll consider it a group effort, then. The words were cruel and sweet. Krennic felt no shame in deriving satisfaction from justice ruthlessly applied. Ready, he said, and his troops checked the settings on their rifles with a metallic click. Aim, he said, and the death squad took aim. And Galen took action at last. He dashed between Krennic and the engineers, spun about and nearly slipped on the wet platform. Stop! He cried again and again, spreading his arms as if he could block the trooper's shots. Krennic, stop! It was me. It was me. They have nothing to do with it. Krennic looked into the face of the man he'd befriended long ago. He waited. Spare them, Galen said. Drenched and tired and wild-eyed, he looked like a man whose genius had deserted him. Krennic crooked a finger at Galen. As if reluctant, the begging man stepped back toward Krennic. Fire! Krennic spat. He didn't watch the crimson bolts flare from his troopers' rifles, didn't bother glancing at the bodies of engineers tumbling to the ground and sizzling in the rain. His eyes were on Galen, and he saw the explosion of shock and fury in the scientist's face, saw him try to hide it the next instant behind a mask of iron. But they were long past hiding things, and Galen should have known better. Krennic swung his fist in a tight arc and felt the back of his hand strike Galen's cheek and chin. Galen staggered and dropped to his knees.
"I fired your weapon,"
Krennic said.
"Jeddah, Saw Gerrera, his band of fanatics, the Holy City, the last reminder of the Jedi."
He paused.
"An entire planet will be next,"
Krennic said. Galen stared up and neither trembled nor shouted.
"You'll never win,"
he said softly. Such a perfect delusion. It was almost beautiful.
"Now where," Krennic asked, "have I heard that before?"
Somewhere in the mud and the rain and the dark, Jean had lost track of Cassian and Bodhi. That wasn't important. She'd found her way down the canyon by the lights of the research facility and onto the base of the landing pad. It was where she needed to be, where her mission to find her father had guided her. It was the answer to the recording that played in the blackness of her mind. And the words of Galen Erso became clearer and louder with every step. She'd needed time to find a way up. There was no unguarded path to reach the platform or the abutting structures from the bottom of the canyon. But she'd located a service ladder built against the canyon wall and begun to climb. The rungs were half slick with water sprayed against them by the breeze, and where she couldn't get a strong grip, she hooked her arm over the metal and pulled, straining her shoulders and kicking until she found purchase. She did this again and again, driving thought and hope and despair blessedly from her mind until she was only the body of Jin, who would climb to the top or who would fall. She did not return to herself until the platform was within reach, and she heard soft voices muffled by the patter of rain. She didn't hesitate to pull herself up and over. It wasn't a safe choice, but her gloved hands had gone numb, and she'd begun slipping a bit more with each rung. She preferred to die moving than to die out of caution. The platform's cold metal felt comforting against her prone body. She had no time to rest, however. A pair of white boots stepped in front of her, and the barrel of a rifle lowered at her head. She reached up to twist the blaster away, lunged to wrest it from the stormtrooper's grasp. In a single motion, she was up and spinning, sweeping the trooper off the platform's edge and sending him into the abyss. His head struck the rock wall instantly. He never screamed. Jin nestled the rifle under her arm and looked around. She could still hear voices, but she'd been lucky. She descended behind a row of cargo crates, and her skirmishing had gone unnoticed. She crept forward, head low, and peered around a crate at the gathering on the platform. What she saw was this. Stormtroopers in white, spread across the platform and observing the proceedings with their weapons at their sides. Imperial officers of various ranks, standing unhappily in the rain. Half a dozen corpses, freshly killed with wounds still smoking. Stormtroopers in black, like the ones who had executed her mother on Lamu. The man in white, who had ordered her mother's execution. And her father, on his knees before the man in white and looking up with pity in his eyes. It was a scene out of her memory, play-acted on a new stage, an impossible nightmare recreation for the benefit of the little girl who had run to the cave. But that girl was buried in the wet dirt below the hatch in Jin's mind. Her wails of anguish and terror were muted. With shaking hands, Jin raised her rifle and aimed for the man in white. Cassian sat among the rocks on the ridge and watched. He had chosen to watch. By setting aside his rifle, he had forfeited his mission, betrayed his oaths, spoken and implicit to Draven and Alliance Intelligence. Under other circumstances, such a betrayal might have felt freeing. As it was, he could do nothing while the man he'd spared was readied for execution. He'd been powerless to stop the slaughter of the engineers. If he'd fired into the crowd, he might have picked off a stormtrooper but done no lasting good. Not that intervention was necessarily in his interests. The lives of Imperial researchers weren't lives that roused emotion in his chest. But it seemed obscene for fate or the Force or ancient Edu gods to slay Galen Erso so soon after Cassian had made his choice. He watched the scene on the platform through his quadnox, scanned the vicinity for anything that might disrupt what seemed likely to happen next. What he found, to his shock, was Jin, hoisting herself over the edge of the platform and throwing a stormtrooper to his doom. What was she doing there? He guessed the answer the moment he posed the question. He didn't have time to consider how he could act on the information before his comlink hissed with static and K2's urgent voice came through.
Cassian, can you hear me?
He snatched up the comlink in one hand, brought it to his mouth. I'm here. He tried to keep watch on Jin as she crept along the cargo crate stacked at the side of the platform. You got the comms working?
Affirmative, but we have a problem. There's an Alliance squadron approaching.
Cassian struggled to hear the words through the distortion and the rain.
Clear the area!
His brain filtered the meaning from the noise a second later. No, he spat. No, no, no! Tell them to hold up! Jin's on that platform! If Draven had sent a fighter squadron, he'd done so in order to complete the mission. To eliminate Galen Erso by leveling the research facility and picking off any soft targets on the ground. The pilots wouldn't know about Cassian and the others. Draven likely wouldn't have bothered informing them. Wouldn't have sent them out if he'd thought Cassian was still alive. Cassian looked at the platform, at the shadowy figure of Jin, and thought to himself, I've killed us all. Draven's countdown was nearing zero. There were rumors spreading around Base One that something had happened on Jeddah, and if rumors were spreading on Yavin, they'd certainly crept to more civilized regions of the galaxy. He had to brief the Alliance High Command Council on the Planet Killer and the mission to Edu. More precisely, he had to brief Mon Mothma. He didn't have time for the council as a whole, and Mothma, much as Draven vigorously disagreed with her strategies, could be brutally straightforward when backed into a corner. The ex-senator and current Alliance chief of state wasn't above playing dirty politics, and Draven had occasionally caught her playing dirtier than she'd like to admit. But in the matter of the Planet Killer, he trusted her to put pragmatism above brinksmanship. He was halfway to Mothma's office on the upper levels of the ziggurat when he was summoned back to the comm center. He hustled down two flights of stairs. His uniform was clinging to the sweat on his back when he arrived.
General!
Private Weems saluted and gestured him to a terminal.
Faint signal from Edu. It's Captain Andor's U-Wing. Full voice, no encryption.
What? They must have lost the whole comm array. Jury-rigged something in its place. He took a seat and hunched over the console. Put it through. A faint, tinny voice spoke. The tone was almost relaxed.
Captain Andor requesting a delay on squadron support.
Andor's pet droid. Draven leaned closer to the console speaker, clenched his jaw as he heard the remainder of the message.
Alliance forces on site. Please confirm.
Draven swore inwardly and gestured rapidly at Weems.
Get the squadron leader on, he said.
Get him on now!
Weems looked as aghast, as if he'd been accused of desertion.
They sent word 3 minutes ago. They're already engaged, sir. Damn it all!
Draven nodded slowly. Possibilities sprouted in his mind. Desperate options bloomed. One by one, he cut down each.
If the squadron was engaged, asking the pilots to abort now would only give the Imperials time to entrench.
The dead wouldn't come back to life. Any survivors of Cassian's team would be left without support and made vulnerable to capture. The mission would certainly fail.
If you can get a message through, he said, let Blue Squadron know what we know. Not that there was anything the squadron could do about it. And as for Andor's team, he sighed. Sometimes good people meet bad ends.
Tell them, he finished. May the Force be with them.
Chapter 12. Baze had allowed Chirrut to lead them up the ridge. He'd taken point often enough, pushed Chirrut to the side to stomp at a crumbling stretch of narrow rock, or gone hunting switchbacks where the ridge became less sheer. But it had been Chirrut to insist higher, until they stood together on the apex, looking far below onto the twisted paths and the research facility.
You said we were following Jin,
Baze growled.
Why are you so literal?
Chirrut asked. His smile was playful, almost smug. Baze grunted in reply.
It was an old habit, a way to assure Chirrut of his presence without words. He doubted his companion appreciated it in the slightest. A short while later, he had his cannon adjusted and the scope to his eye. There was a gathering on the facility's landing pad. He spied stormtroopers and officers, a shuttle descending. He looked at the pale, clean-shaven face of a young Imperial captain, haughty and smirking at something his neighbor had said. It was the face of a man who had the luxury of thinking of something other than death, something other than the ruin of everything he had loved. Baze, Chirrut said.
Baze readied himself to pull the trigger on his cannon, to burn the platform with more blaster bolts than there were drops of rain on Edu.
I sense anger in you,
Chirrut said.
Let the Imperials sense it too, Baze thought.
This is not what we came for,
Chirrut said. There was no playfulness in him now.
This solves nothing.
Baze jerked his weapon down and turned to his companion.
They destroyed our home! I will kill them!
Chirrut said nothing, but the blind man's unflappable calm, the wind tugging at his clothes and the rain beating against his scalp, seemed to leech some of Baze's ire. In time, Baze spun back and lodged himself among the rocks, observing the goings-on on the platform with his naked eye. The Imperials were only smudges that way. Harder to hate a smudge.
So what did we come for? Baze asked. If not vengeance, are we lackeys of the rebellion now?
Chirrut tapped at the ground with his staff, searching out the edge of the cliff before crouching at Baze's side.
Captain Andor is the only lackey of the rebellion here, and even he may not last much longer.
Then why follow Jin?
Baze asked. He had allowed Chirrut to lead the way up the ridge. He had allowed Chirrut to lead him in many things, and learned long ago not to demand answers. But grief had turned all his lessons to tatters. Today was not a day for the evasions of a guardian of the wills. Chirrut knew, of course. So many years together, how could he not?
Because she shines,
Chirrut said, and placed a hand on Baze's shoulder. For a few short minutes, there was serenity in the rain on the mountaintop.
Then the sky roared, and starfighters blazed trails of fire above them, silencing the storm. The alarm began to wail seconds before the first blast hit. Jin's aim slipped from her target. Then she saw the X-Wing diving, saw its laser cannons flare. The volley cut across the platform, setting fire to metal and sending waves of sparks skidding in all directions. The stormtroopers and officers struck squarely by the blasts died instantly, burned to char. Those on the edges of the volley screamed and clutched their wounds and ran. Jin retreated behind the cargo crates, dragged in a ragged breath of the suddenly smoky air. The X-Wing leveled out of its dive. She heard its cannons continue pulsing, the sound rapidly falling off as the vessel flew past the platform. She didn't bother to ask herself where the attacker had come from. She knew, however, it wouldn't have come alone. The alarm's wail seemed faint in the aftermath of the assault. Someone was screaming orders to scramble fighters to return fire. Jin took the opportunity to creep out from behind her cover and scan the platform for her father. He was there where she had left him, still near the furiously yelling man in white, the ghost standing in the midst of mayhem, threatening to kill Jin's mother again with the mere fact of his existence. But her father was pushing himself upright, standing unsteadily. He was alive. She wanted to run to him. She forgot every fear she'd had of the reunion. But now two more X-Wings had begun a strafing run, and the blinding crimson of laser fire, the heat of boiling rainwater against her cheeks, overwhelmed Jin for 1 second, two, three. She blinked spots from her eyes and cinders from her lashes and sprinted, head low and rifle cradled in both arms. She shouldered a panting officer to one side, leapt over the burning body of a stormtrooper.
"Papa!"
she screamed. Galen turned. He saw her. For the first time in nearly 15 years, Jin's father was looking at her. She kept running, struggling to find traction on the wet metal. She saw the man in white stop shouting orders and whirl toward her, drawing his sidearm. She didn't break stride. She brought up her rifle, ready to kill the ghost to reach her father. Whether the man in white ever fired, Jin didn't know. Her body went numb as a shockwave slammed into her, as thunder and shattering metal assailed her ears. She felt her feet leave the ground and her skull strike steel. All she saw of the proton torpedo that hit the platform was a blinding incandescence. She wondered whether her father had even recognized her. The platform was burning. There was nothing Cassian could see besides oily smoke, low-burning flames, and silhouettes crawling through the pandemonium. He had no target, no means to intervene. "Jin," he whispered. "No." He didn't even know if she was alive. With his rifle slung over one shoulder, he ran. He half-slid down the muddy ridge, digging his front heel into the street to avoid doubling over into a roll. When he had enough purchase to maneuver, he set out toward the research facility and the platform, hoping his path would be clear through the darkness. He knew he was running toward catastrophe. The odds of him reaching Jin, if she'd survived, were slim. The Imperials would shoot at him on sight, and there was no time for stealth. The Rebel squadron would continue attacking until it was driven off, or until the facility was buried in rubble. But he was free of his mission now, and if he failed to save Jin, he had to save her. The sky was ablaze with green and red energy. TIE fighters had joined the battle, swooping to intercept Rebel X-Wings and slower Y-Wing bombers. Volleys of turret fire from points around the research facility and along the canyon rim glimmered and hummed.
Cassian spotted an X-Wing caught in crossfire. It spun and plunged toward the rocks. He couldn't see where it struck, but the roar of its death echoed across the valley. He fell as much as he ran, dropping through open air and landing on his heels or tumbling before he rose and resumed his stride. A thought sparked in his brain. If he found Jin, where would they go? They were still trapped on Edu. But it didn't matter. Didn't change the immediacy of his needs. A great bright bolt streaked overhead like a meteor. The bolt lanced one of the TIE fighters, sending it spiraling through the rain until it collided with a turret. The white bloom that followed illuminated Edu as far as Cassian could see. When he glanced behind him, traced the after image of the bolt's path toward its source, he saw two humanoid silhouettes standing far above him on the ridge. One of the silhouettes was carrying a staff. The U-Wing was on fire. Struck, intentionally or not, Bodhi wasn't sure, during a TIE fighter's berserker maneuvering over the canyon. The Rebel Alliance X-Wing squadron, much like Saw's Rebels on Jedha, seemed to have no particular interest in whether Bodhi lived or died. And of the companions he'd taken up with, the companions who'd almost started to tolerate him, the only one left was the droid, who, Bodhi suspected, wanted him locked away.
"Would you like to be carried?"
K2SO asked as they hurried away from the burning hulk of the U-Wing. The droid's strides were markedly slower than Bodhi's, but his spindly limbs crossed twice the distance with every step.
"No,"
Bodhi said. It was more breath than he had to spare.
"I could carry you anyway,"
the droid said.
"That way you wouldn't have to choose."
Bodhi staggered to a halt and clapped his knees, hung his head panting for what he knew was too long.
"No,"
he managed at last.
"No, listen. I need you to trust me, all right? You need to follow my lead and not say anything unless someone asks you to."
Rain bounced off the droid's chest plate. K2SO looked at Bodhi appraisingly.
"Trust is a matter of degree. I really don't know you, Bodhi Rook."
Bodhi cringed and shook his head.
"There's no time!"
The others were waiting. Galen Erso was waiting. He wanted to shout. Instead, he talked.
"You do know me," he said. "Look, you, me."
He jabbed his finger at the Imperial emblem on the droid's arm, then at the identical symbol on his flight suit.
"We both got them, and we're both here anyway. We both want to stop the Death Star, right? Both want to help the rebellion."
The droid didn't answer. Bodhi was talking too fast now. But if anyone could understand him, it would be a machine.
"Cassian reprogrammed you, right? Maybe? You're loyal to him. I get that. Galen Erso reprogrammed me. We can still get this mission right, and we want the same thing, but you have to let me lead the way."
Something exploded on the canyon ridge. The light made K2SO look wraith-like, a gaunt shadow with deathly bright eyes.
"All right, then."
Bodhi nodded briskly, raggedly, and turned to face the shuttleport. He had never intended to come back to Edu. He'd never meant to set foot in an Imperial garrison again after defecting. Galen had made it sound simple, like he could turn the message over to Saw Gerrera and sneak away somewhere outside the Empire, somewhere the Rebellion would hide him and pay decent money for all the good he'd done. He suspected that plan had never really been in the cards. But he'd never been a good gambler, and he couldn't blame the dealer for that.
"If a fight starts," Bodhi said, "try not to hurt anyone we don't have to."
"I always try."
Bodhi started toward the shuttleport's bright lights and prayed he could find a way off-world. Jin woke to something burning in her lungs and the smell of death in her nostrils. When she coughed, the jolt sent needles of pain from her neck to the small of her back. She rolled onto her chest and climbed to her knees and reached with her right hand to steady herself on the platform.
only to find her fingers tracing the hot, charred edges of a hole that spanned much of the landing pad. To her left was a corpse too black and bloody to identify. She concluded she was alive. Where was her father?
Director! Someone called. We have to evacuate!
She looked toward the noise. Through thick smoke, she spotted two officers supporting the man in white, leading him past sputtering fires up the boarding ramp of the shuttle. As the ramp began to close, the man in white cast a final glance toward a body across the hole from Jin. Galen's body. Jin forced herself to stand and felt agony wrench her spine. She tried to run and took awkward, plodding strides instead. If anyone had tried to shoot her, she would have died instantly. But no one bothered. She heard footsteps and shouting. She saw no one else through the smoke. Raindrops sprayed against her, and a harsh gust of warm air dropped her to her knees again. As the shuttle lifted off the platform, its engine backwash built until Jin was sliding back toward the platform's edge. She prostrated herself, clawed at the slick metal with her fingertips, and only the shuttle's final ascension saved her from the fate of the stormtrooper she'd killed earlier. As she dragged herself from the precipice and stumbled upright, she saw her fingernails were cracked and caked with soot. Trembling, she retraced her path. Soon she was steadier. Then she was running to her father's side. She knelt in ashes, wrapping her arms around Galen and drawing him against her chest. He was so light, a crumpled leaf of a man. But he was warm. He was breathing.
Papa,
she whispered.
It's Jin.
His head lolled and he stared at the clouds before finally turning her way. There was pain in his face, bewilderment, and a joy he seemed not to entirely trust.
Jin,
he said, and she nodded, her eyes stung with smoke and tears.
My father is alive. My father is dying.
Stardust,
he said, lips moving with overwrought care, as if he wanted her to recognize the word even if his breath failed him. She stroked his wet and grimy hair. Like Saw, he was a shadow of the man she remembered. Where she had grown, he had withered. Even the man in the hologram had been more solid than the man she held now. She was surprised to realize she felt no hate at all. There was nothing to hate. Just a dying man who loved her and who exhausted everything else he was. Her confessions, too, fled her. This was not a man who needed to hear what the Death Star had done, or the faith she'd lost in him, or the deeds Lyanna and Tanith and Kestrel had committed when he began telling himself, "If you're happy, Jin, then that's more than enough." He was speaking again, watching with sad intensity.
"It must be destroyed," he said.
"I know," she said, soothing, reassuring,
shivering as she leaned as close as she could.
"I've seen your message."
She wasn't sure he heard her. He wet his lips.
"Someone has to destroy it."
Painfully slowly, he lifted one arm. His wrist was twitching almost imperceptibly as his muscles strained. Three soft fingertips dragged across Jin's cheek and then fell.
"Papa?"
Her throat felt thick.
"No. No."
She smoothed hair away from his forehead. He was warm, but his chest no longer rose and fell. Not even with the tiny, wounded animal breaths he'd struggled to take before.
"Papa! Papa! Come on!"
She looked inward, to the cave in her mind. But the hologram was gone and its words no longer echoed. Now there was only darkness and emptiness. Nothing to shelter her or guard her or guide her remained. She didn't let go of Galen, of her father,
as a white-armored body stepped out of the smoke and took aim. She felt for her rifle and found nothing. She couldn't remember when she'd dropped it. She clutched the body tighter and braced for one last shock of pain. She heard the shot. She watched the stormtrooper fall. Cassian emerged from the smoke behind him and was by her side in an instant, hands on her arms and trying to coax her upright, tug her away from Galen. "Jin, we've got to go. Come on." She didn't understand where he'd come from, in the same way she didn't understand the attack by the X-Wings. Understanding wouldn't make any difference. "I can't leave him," she said. "Listen to me." Firm but not harsh, he uncurled her fingers from her father's body. Galen's warmth slipped away, replaced by the chill of the rain. "He's gone," Cassian said. "He's gone. There's nothing you can do. Come on." Her father dropped to the metal. "Help me," Jin said, and she was surprised to hear the force in her voice. "Come on," Cassian pressed. He hoisted Jin to her feet. The pain raced through her body and seemed to activate her nerves. The smoke hurt to breathe. Footsteps were racing toward them. The platform itself was groaning. She had to leave or die with her father. "Move," Cassian urged. She took his hand and let him show her the way out. Cassian had seen Jin broken and trapped inside herself in the monastery on Jeddah. What he saw now was different. She was alert, keenly aware of her surroundings and her decisions. He only needed to make sure she decided to stay alive. He'd failed her father already. He kept one hand on Jin's arm and the other on his rifle as he picked his way around the fires and gaping holes of the platform. He knew their time was short. He'd seen the rebel squadron pull out of the sky shortly before he'd found Jin. Now the Imperials were scrambling as the inferno unleashed by the bombs spread through the facility. Half the garrison was hunting for intruders, while the remainder raced to evacuate. Cassian had found a cargo turbo lift, unguarded in the chaos, to bring him to the platform. He'd led Jin half a dozen meters to the door when a stormtrooper squad emerged from one of the neighboring structures. Cassian raised his rifle, too many to take out, but he could give Jin cover, and watched a rapid volley of particle bolts topple the soldiers like toy dolls. The bolts had come from the direction of the ridge. He'd only ever seen a sniper eliminate a squad so quickly once before. "Thank you, Baze," he thought, and sprinted for the turbo lift. "Come on," he called the Jin. "Come on!" He snapped off three shots as more stormtroopers poured onto the landing pad. He didn't see whether he hit his targets. Instead, he glanced over to Jin. She was looking toward her father. When she turned back to Cassian, there was ice in her eyes, but she ran with him. Soon they were on the canyon floor, splashing through puddles and kicking stones behind their heels. Endless barrages of crimson bolts drove down from the landing pad. As Cassian and Jin rounded the base of a rocky pillar, more particle blasts sounded behind them. Cassian tried to raise K2 on his comlink and failed. He spoke Baze and Chirrut's names into the comlink before remembering they had no comms at all. He caught sight of the stormtroopers in the canyon fanning out, taking a hunting formation. On familiar ground, Cassian might have eluded them, but he could barely see a stone's throw ahead, and he would glow like a beacon to any heat sensors. Without a reprieve, he and Jin would both be dead soon enough. "The starfighters," Jin said, with gravel in her voice. "Can you call them back?" Her hair was plastered to her face. Streaks of ash covered her cheeks and chin. She looked like she'd stepped out of her own cremation to take vengeance on the world that had done her wrong. "I can't," Cassian said. "They're gone."
But their alliance...
It sounded like an accusation more than a question.
They're yours.
They don't take my orders, Cassian said. And I don't have a way to contact them. They can't save us.
He couldn't tell what she was thinking. Couldn't guess what she might fixate on next in her distress.
We're on our own, Jin.
A volley of blaster bolts sparked against the rock nearby. Jin looked impassively past Cassian at the ghostly troops in white armor. A sudden roar and a blast of wind nearly smashed Cassian against the stone. Rising above the crest of a ridge, diving toward Cassian and Jin, came an Imperial shuttle. Not the one Cassian had seen on the platform, but a worn and battered Zeta-class vessel built for cargo hauling. It rode the storm winds like a boat bobbing in a whirlpool, yet it steadied as it came closer to ground. Laser cannons twitched on its undercarriage, acquiring targets, and spat toward the soldiers in the mist. Stormtroopers cried out and fell in burning heaps. Cassian wanted to laugh, to shout. The shuttle's boarding ramp screeched as it descended from the hovering ship, metal sheeting singing in the wind. A voice came from inside.
Let's go! Let's go! Let's go!
Silhouetted against the interior light was Bodhi, waving frantically. Cassian and Jin ran together and clambered up the ramp. Bodhi was grinning broadly, but when he saw Jin, somber, implacable, his face fell. Cassian felt the ship lift beneath him and turned around, nearly stumbling out the door and peering through the shroud of rain. He saw what he was looking for and cried toward the cockpit.
Wait, wait! Kay!
Chirrut was scrambling down a rock slope, tapping at the ground with his staff in one hand and carrying his ornate light bow in the other. Baze followed, twisting his torso and never lowering his cannon as he watched for pursuit. Both men burst up the ramp and into the bay of the cargo shuttle. Cassian eyed Chirrut's light bow with newfound appreciation.
You take out a TIE fighter with that thing?
Don't praise him, Baze growled, chest heaving with breath. You're lucky he didn't hit you.
Bodhi threw a switch and the ramp began to close. As he raced for the cockpit ladder, he called,
K2, all aboard, let's go!
Copy you, the droid's voice returned faintly. Launching and away.
The cabin shook as the shuttle lifted out of the canyon, banked around an outcropping, and began a rapid ascent skyward. A series of distant, thunderous blasts, some clipped and clustered together, others protracted, followed. The laboratory, Cassian thought. The fires had found the kyber crystals, or some other volatile material on site. That limited the likelihood of pursuit, at least. As the sounds of the storm and the destruction faded away, the shuttle steadied. They were leaving the atmosphere. Cassian slumped against the cargo webbing to catch his own breath and felt the exuberance of escape replaced by fatigue. He looked to Baze and Chirrut and saw that both wore bleak expressions. They were expecting Galen Erso. Bodhi almost certainly had been too. Cassian didn't look at Jin at all. Krennic woke to the taste of dust and smoke, immediately coughing and expelling a black wad of phlegm. He was aboard his shuttle, strapped into a seat. Pitaro, his aide, knelt beside him. Krennic waved away a question about his health and tried to piece together how he'd arrived. He remembered the torpedo blast. He'd made it to the shuttle before blacking out.
The rebels, he growled. An assassination attempt?
Yes, sir,
Pitaro replied. Spot us on the ground and an X-Wing squadron so far as we can tell. Something troubled Krennic about that summary. He felt the absence of some element like a missing tooth, caught a flash of dark hair and felt the long-forgotten hitch in his shoulder. But it was a problem for later. He continued reviewing the jumble of images in his mind.
Galen Erso?
He asked. He didn't survive the attack, sir. Krennic's jaw tightened. For an instant, the smell of ashes was overpowering, flooding his brain until nausea and vertigo assailed him.
You'll never win.
But he had won, or close enough. Galen had admitted to treason, though of course he'd needed Krennic to play the role of oppressor. As he had on Lamu. Galen had arranged a scenario in which they would walk away hero and villain, in which Galen could wrap himself in righteous outrage when he began the work anew. Only Galen really hadn't walked away this time. The X-Wing pilots had given Krennic revenge without reconciliation. He might have still used Galen somehow, albeit under close watch. Now he would remember the man not as a brilliant scientist, but as wasted potential, as little more than Willith Tarkin's cat's paw. Krennic coughed as dust and bile rose again in his throat. He waved off Patero's aid, dragged his gloved fingers over his face, and stilled himself. Maybe Galen's death was for the best, he thought. There were degrees of treason, and some could never be forgiven.
Sir!
Patero was standing over him, the corner of his mouth quivering.
Spit it out, man,
Krennic growled. He'd lost enough time to unconsciousness on a very busy day.
We received new orders while you were occupied,
Patero said. Again he hesitated.
You've been ordered to Mustafar. Lord Vader wants to speak with you.
Darth Vader, the Emperor's right hand and executioner, ally of Willith Tarkin. A summons from Vader boded poorly, but the meeting might also be the opportunity Krennic needed.
Set a course, Krennic shrugged. We don't want to keep his lordship waiting.
He looked down at himself and straightened his uniform with a tug. He noted black smudges from smoke and charred metal, a patch of red where someone, probably him, had bled. He wondered if he would have time to clean up before arriving. Or maybe Lord Vader would respect a man who'd seen combat.
Supplemental data, Battle Station Engineering Notes.
Document number YM3884L. Waste Radiation Distribution Solutions. Time-stamped approximately 18 months prior to Operation Fracture. Sent from Engineering Operations Manager Shaith Vodran to Galen Erso.
Erso, I had the droids generate a new system safety and compatibility report incorporating your team's proposed adjustments to the reactor core. The new plans triggered a dozen subsystem warnings and spat out one blazing red stain on the line labeled Hypermatter Annihilator Unit. I didn't bother asking my astromech how bad that could be. A red line on a critical system speaks for itself. Why are we even making reactor modifications this late in the game? Have your engineers check their work better next time. Suffice to say, no changes are approved.
Document number YM3884M. Reply to Waste Radiation Distribution Solutions. Sent from Galen Erso to Engineering Operations Manager Shaith Vodran.
Vodran, sincere apologies. I fully agree that this is unacceptable. The modifications are intended to reduce primary weapon recharge times to satisfactory levels. I'm sure you saw Tarkin's directive, but sloppy work is sloppy work. I assume you alerted Director Krennic to the report as well. More as soon as I've spoken with my team.
Document number YM3884N. Reply to Waste Radiation Distribution Solutions. Sent from Engineering Operations Manager Shaith Vodran to Galen Erso.
Director Krennic is copied on all SSCRs, but if he wants oversight on these particular modifications, it's your responsibility to brief him on your problems.
Document number YM38840. Reply to Waste Radiation Distribution Solutions. Sent from Galen Erso to Engineering Operations Manager Shaith Vodran.
Vodran, I alerted the director personally at your suggestion. I also spoke to my team, and we identified the problem. The reactor core modifications are resulting in radiation buildup, which in turn has the potential of interfering with the hypermatter annihilator. The buildup is caused by the inner shield actively reflecting excess particles and, metaphorically, cooking the reactor core. Had the shielding team's research not been so heavily compartmentalized, this might have been avoided. Nonetheless, the reactor core modifications must remain as is. Therefore, we are left with three possible ways of avoiding radiation buildup. Option one, construction of a particle funnel and recycler. This is known and tested technology. I am confident it will function. Physical requirements mean the recycler would need to replace existing non-critical mechanisms under the Northern Command Sector. But I estimate the needed disassembly would take under 2 weeks. Option two. Further refinement of our reactor technology to reduce waste particles. I have several team members keen on this possibility. They are excited about the potential for a technological breakthrough. Option three. Construction of manual venting shafts and thermal exhaust ports. This should reduce particle buildup to within tolerances, but not to a degree I find personally acceptable. In addition, adding venting shafts risks additional incompatibilities with non-critical systems. Please alert me if you have concerns.
Document number YM3884P. Reply to Waste Radiation Distribution Solutions. Sent from Engineering Operations Manager Shaith Vodran to Galen Erso.
I oversaw construction of the Northern Command Sector myself. Tarkin has already toured the facilities. If the particle funnel and recycler can't go anywhere else, stick with options two and three. You might want to give Krennic the final decision. He's concerned about the timetable.
Document number YM3884Q. Particle Buildup. Sent from Galen Erso to Advanced Weapons Research Director Orson Krennic.
Director, as we discussed, attached our preliminary reports on two methods for reducing particle buildup. I've made my preferences clear in person, but I defer to your judgment.
Document number YM3884R. Reply to Particle Buildup. Sent from Advanced Weapons Research Director Orson Krennic to Galen Erso.
Galen, new research and technological development is out of the question at this juncture. Work up a full proposal for the exhaust port solution and send the plans to Vodran for SSCR.
Document number YM3884S. Venting shafts. Sent from Engineering Operations Manager Shaith Vodran to Galen Erso.
Erso, what is this trash? The system safety and compatibility report quit running after 200 red lines. I only reviewed the first dozen, but it looks like you're flooding half the station with radiation. I thought these venting shafts were supposed to solve the problem. No changes are approved.
Document number YM3884T. Reply to venting shafts. Sent from Galen Erso to Engineering Operations Manager Shaith Vodran.
I repeat myself, but I apologize. As you know, an engineer may be single-minded in his or her focus on a particular task. I, along with my team, have fallen victim to the sin of hubris. Of course, I should have warned you that your droids might register dangers. The venting shafts are designed to expel the majority of the heat and particle buildup, but some radiation leakage is inevitable.
We estimate that human crew members stationed in any of 15 sections would, in the event that the battle station fires the primary weapon 3 times within 1 hour, be placed at increased risk for a wide variety of long-term health problems. The SSCR, of course, detected this in those 200 red lines. I am instructing my team to look into all options. To expedite matters, I must request the use of your droids in running several alternative scenarios. This will be an inconvenience, I realize, but the safety of the battle station's crew is paramount.
Document number YM3884U. Reply to venting shafts. Sent from Engineering Operations Manager Shaith Vodran to Galen Erso.
Are the command sectors or office quarters in the affected radiation zones?
Document number YM3884V. Reply to venting shafts. Sent from Galen Erso to Engineering Operations Manager Shaith Vodran.
No.
Document number YM3884W. Reply to venting shafts. Sent from Engineering Operations Manager Shaith Vodran to Galen Erso.
Send me your final plans. I'll declare the droids in error and override the next SSCR. I'm not burying Krennic in redline reports while you figure out how to keep a handful of stormtroopers from developing a cough.
Document number YM3884X. Reply to venting shafts. Sent from Galen Erso to Engineering Operations Manager Shaith Vodran.
That's not necessary. I'm certain we can resolve this. Even if a technical solution fails, we may be able to alter crew rotation schedules to mitigate any health risks.
Document number YM3884Y. Reply to venting shafts. Sent from Engineering Operations Manager Shaith Vodran to Galen Erso.
You may be too obtuse to realize it, Erso, but I'm doing you a favor. This project needed to be done weeks ago. Send me the final venting shaft and exhaust port plans. I'll bypass SSCR and submit them for production, manufacturing, and installation. Changes have been approved.
Chapter 13.
Jin felt the chill of her drenched clothes acutely. She felt everything acutely, as if the dark of the cave that had swallowed her also intensified her senses. Bodhi was giving instructions to K2SO while climbing down from the cockpit. Baze and Chirrut sat motionless, dripping and somber, their attention on her. Cassian was stripping off his wet gear, dropping jacket and quadnox and rifle in a pile. Cassian, who had betrayed her. When had she figured it out? During the race from the landing platform? When the first X-Wings had streaked across the sky? It didn't matter. Over the years, she'd developed a sense for betrayal. She'd mostly grown numb to it, accepted it as the price of living free among killers and thieves. Why had she expected more from the rebellion? "You lied to me," she said to Cassian. He flinched like a man struck by a blow he'd known was coming. "You're in shock," he said. He met her stare, held it as he turned to face her fully, trying to bring her to heel. "You went up there to kill my father." His answer came instantly. "You don't know what you're talking about."
"Deny it," she snapped.
And then again, more slowly, "You went up there to kill my father." Her father, who hadn't been a hero or a traitor in the end, just a frail man she hadn't had the chance to know. She recognized the pain welling up at the thought and made it hard and sharp as a weapon. It was an old and practiced reconfiguration. Bodhi was gazing at Cassian as if wounded, but like Cassian, he seemed unsurprised by the accusation. Jin was confirming something he'd chosen to disbelieve.
Baze looked at Cassian with all the disgust he'd shown dead stormtroopers on Jeddah. Chirrut's head was down. Jin thought he might have been praying. "You're in shock," Cassian repeated, and looking for someplace to put it. "I've seen it before."